Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
We're going to try something a bit different now, an experiment, if you will, where two people at different stages of life ask each other questions about how they navigate life and they learn from each other. So it's kind of like things I wish I'd known and things I'd like to know. So Cathy Kelly and Stephanie Preisner, good morning to you both.
Morning.
Good morning.
And thank you both for taking part in this little experiment, because I think it does require a certain openness from both of you. So, Cathy, you used to kind of do this for a living as an agony aunt with The Sunday World, but of course you're now a successful novelist. Stephanie, you're just back to work as a writer after maternity leave. And I think, in fairness, you are a sort of unofficial agony aunt, because I know you help a lot of people, Stephanie, by speaking so honestly about your own life and struggles in your columns and your podcasts. So what we've done is we've asked you both to bring questions for each other. So will we just get down to it, Stephanie? You've written and spoken about how hard and lonely it can be being a new mother. And your first question for Cathy is around motherhood.
Yeah, so Cathy obviously is in a different stage of her life. She has children and an amazing career that continues but has grown in the last number of years. And so my question is, like, as a mother of young children, life feels really chaotic, like a whirlwind. And how did you manage to carve out time but also energy to write and develop your voice as an author, especially in the early years of raising a family?
Okay, this is the bit where I go, cue hysterical laughter. You know, the fact that you're here at all, and your beautiful baby Billy Zephyr, who's gorgeous, I mean, he's 15 weeks old.
16.
Yeah. I mean, that is so hard. I guess it's the thing. It's not that nobody ever tells you, because people do tell you, but until such time as you have, and you've two small children, you're there with two small kids, and you've a job where you primarily work from home. That is completely head-wrecking. And I don't think there's no easy way to do it. I was 37 when I had my beautiful boys, twins, and they're going to be 21 in July. And I brought three books into the hospital. You know, I was very thick. One of them was about having a baby, but the others were different sort of books. And I had this vision that life would be unchanged. And there is, you know, such a sea change. It's like, you know, someone turns your world upside down. And this comes on to something we're going to talk about later. You're responsible for these tiny creatures. Motherhood means, I mean, the very evolutionary process means we have to sort of go, nothing matters. I've got to keep these little beautiful people alive. So everything else goes out the window.
Yeah, but like, is it okay to not like it? Like, I love my children, but like, I also love my job. And I feel like you said there, like, okay, everything else goes out the window and I just focus on, I have to keep these beautiful things alive. But I don't.
But sometimes that's hard. That's really hard.
But I also, like, it's hard, but I'm good at it, but I don't love it. Like, I don't want really to be doing it.
Do you feel, Stephanie, that does the culture kind of enforce on you all the time that you need to love this and find it the most fulfilling thing ever?
Does. Like, and I don't find it fulfilling. I don't find it fulfilling at all. And I had such a difficulty. Like, I had numerous miscarriages, one in the second trimester. These are really wanted children. You know, all children are probably wanted, but like, we paid a lot of money and got a lot of help to have these children, and it's now I feel like, oh God, like, I exploded my life.
But the thing is, it is really hard. Somebody wrote a wonderful piece. I think it was Tanya Sweeney, actually, who writes fabulous pieces. And she wrote a piece about the words that fill her with fear, which is when her little girl says, "Mommy, get down on the floor and play." And there are things like that, you know, get down on the floor and play. That I used to find that very difficult. I didn't mind if it was Sylvanians, because I could arrange the Sylvanians in some sort of OCD way. Yeah. And, you know, they were all put together and then a small hand had come through and break them. But you know what? There's plenty of times when it's not wildly fulfilling.
Say it, Kat. They're boring. They're boring sometimes.
No, it's not that they're boring, but it's just that you have to keep doing it again. It's like the housework, you know, you make the beds, you clean the house, 6 months later, you've got to do it all again. But it's tiring, it's exhausting, and nobody stands there and says, "You are amazing, you did this."
Whereas, they do say it if you're the dad.
They do say it if you're totally.
But I would be an amazing dad.
Yeah, I know. A lot of us would be amazing dads. But if you do it when you're the mom, Nobody comes around and goes, wow, Stephanie, you knocked it out of the park today. You didn't kill anyone. You kept those kids alive. The house is reasonable. There is some washing done and they have been fed. And you go to bed and you go, oh my God, is this it? Whereas up to now, you've had this amazing career where people go, Stephanie, you're rocking it. It's a different sort of thing. And that's a massive adjustment.
At what age does that change? Do I get to be Stephanie Prisoner, the writer again?
You know, in my experience, I got to be Cathy Kelly, the writer, in between. So it was very much an in between. It was never quite the same. Okay. And
so never?
Yeah. No, it's not never, because now I'm at a point where, you know, they're moving on and I have a son in London and, you know, another son in college here, and they're not around so much, well, especially the one in London. And I'm going, okay, this was this thing I did for a very long time. And suddenly I'm not required. And you feel, damn it, I've just lost one of my jobs and I didn't even get a payout. I mean, so you do change. You change, and with their stages, and you manage to do your career alongside, and this is the horrible bit, doing all the other stuff. And it changes. Small babies, you know, you're going to have less of a, I don't know, less of a fabulous relationship, because they just keep wanting the same thing. And that's what they do. They're little bappers and they just want mommy, love, kiss me. It's sort of like having a puppy, except, you know, you can't, you know, lock them outside the back garden and go, stay outside for 10 minutes. You can't do that with
nobody's asking me, but I always had a very simple rule of thumb.
Okay.
That when you can't take any more of one particular phase of them, and you just think, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. You wake up the next morning and suddenly they've moved on to another phase. It's like magic. It's evolutionary. They know, like, it's all phases.
This is it. And
I'm not into phases. I don't like change. Like, I just, like,
because
with the phases with me, I don't get to, I can't do this phase anymore. I get, okay, I know this. I know this now. Okay, we're putting the bolognese on the wall. Grant, I have the new cleaner. I have the spot touching paint. We're into this now. And then it changes. And I'm like, oh God, now I'm completely unqualified for this new phase and I've no idea what's happening.
But that's what all mothers think. I mean, you know, one day they'll be in school and they'll be 10 and someone will be mean to them and they'll come home and they'll be upset and you have to sort of therap them out of it. And you're going, I'm completely unqualified for this phase.
Okay, can I ask you a question then? Why do people, what's the positive? That's a funny way of me phrasing it, but like, why do you do it? Because it feels like to have children in this political, environmental moment we're in seems like irresponsible. I feel sick at the thought of someone bullying them. I feel sick at the thought of them getting a mobile phone, seeing pornography. I'm not sleeping. They need me all the time, which is fine. But I'm like, what is, when, why do we do this? Is it just like to keep the world going? Or is there a point at which it's brilliant? Or is it just like little moments of loveliness in between little moments of terribleness for the rest of my life?
I think part of the things are that we are both creative people and we possibly have anxiety. And when you put those two things together, so on that level, we may not be the mainstream here. So, you know, when you put it like that, it's actually terrifying. I mean, nobody can catastrophize like me, and I don't know why there isn't a, you know, thing in the Olympics for it. But I can catastrophize everything. So I can go down the, oh my God, phone, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's this wonderful joy with them, as long as you can, oh God, this sounds very mindfulness-y, and I'm always trying to get to the bottom of mindfulness and do more of it, because this moment is completely amazing and we'll never have this again. But your point, when you are at this exhausting level, you're a new mom. Mm-hmm. Like in the front of you, sorry, not a new mom. You've just had a second baby. You are all over the shop.
Okay,
so that is going to affect everything. Just say to yourself, give it a year. Okay. Now, I know you're going, Jesus, give it a year. I'll be, you know, on major meds in a year.
No.
I know, we're all on them now.
I'm mainly feeling guilty for making you come in here, Stephanie.
No, it's fine. I'm delighted to be here.
Are you sure? Yeah, okay.
No. I'm just doing it because I think she's amazing for being in here. You know what I mean? And like, you know what, I mean, I have chemo brain. I mean, I can't remember anything. You know, I have to, my phone notes thing is full of stuff, you know. But
how are you doing, Kathy?
No, I'm doing grand, but it's, you know what, it's cancer is not just for Christmas, it's for life. It's a massive sea change in your life, and I'm going to be at least a year getting over the side effects. I mean, every joint in my body is exploding and I'm exhausted all the time. But you know what? We'll sort of...
Will it definitely pass? Like, do they say in a year you won't have chemo brain anymore?
I don't know. Okay. The jury's out on chemo brain. It's a weird one. There's a lot of stuff, but it's, you know, that's a massive life change. But at this point in my life, I'm going, okay, I'm just going to have to, as Joan Didion says, play it as it lays. Just keep going on. But I'm not running around after small children. So that, you know, I'm just worrying about grown-up children and paying for them and looking after them and minding them, and which we'll move on to something else. What happens to them if my cancer mm-hmm. comes
and,
back?
And we'll move on to something else as well, because there's lots we want to get through. Cathy, you have a question for Stephanie around mental health.
Oh, yes. I have to try and find my question around mental health, which is written down here, because God forbid I would try to, you know, remember this. Oh, yeah. Now, this is what I was thinking, is because you're so good at... I mean, you're such a different generation from me. I'm 57 and, you know, the whole social media world, it's important. I mean, it seems to me to be present in that online world seems like another full-time job. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, how do you manage it? Because it... To me, it's, oh God, I better do this because I better be on, you know, well, not Twitter so much because it seems to be totally bonkers now, or X, as we should be calling it. So how do you manage that? And how do you maintain a sense of distance as well when, you know, so I've always been aware of keeping a part of my life private, which is, I think, a very journalistic-y thing, because I know that once
And it's
you
an old-fashioned thing as well. It's because of our generation, roughly. It wasn't there when we were starting out.
It wasn't there when we were starting out. And also, as a journalist, you know that if you open a door, that door is open. So, you know, let people in, they're in.
Yeah, so I might not be the best person to ask, because I think there are people who do this better than me, but I don't have much private in my life. And that's from social media, but also what I write about in the Sunday Independent. I kind of feel like I have a difficulty between privacy and secrecy. And to me, if I keep something private, it feels like a secret. Okay. And if it's a secret, then... it's bad. So I'm like, this has all happened. And then I'm like, well, you can never use it against me. Like, if I was to run for president, there is nothing that could come out in that election campaign that isn't already out there. And there's kind of a power in that. But you're right, it is exhausting. And when you ask about social media and the full-timeness of it, it is full-time, right? But it's my generation, like, we're just used to it. I sometimes think about, especially now with the kids, how did mothers get multiple children up, dressed, fed and ready for mass at 10 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday? Like, at one time, mass was like a full-time thing. Like, prayers and priests and the stations and all that felt like... I can't imagine how you would have time for that now, in the same way that that generation wonders how we have time to be on social media all the time. It's just like part of our lives. So it doesn't, it's not something I carve out time for.
And not having privacy sets you free, you feel.
Yeah. It's just that there's nothing.
Because, Cathy, I think our kind of thing at the stage we're at is we kind of go, yeah, that's all very well for the young crowd now, but life is complicated and takes unusual turns, and there will be a time when, you know, privacy it can be a good thing. Is that kind of how you would tend to think?
That's exactly what I think. And I'm like, you know, if I tell people everything, you know, really, they'd be shocked. They go, geez, that nice Cathy Kelly, I never would have thought that. No, I'm joking. But it's, I don't know, it's an innate thing to keep something in there that's private. And I do think that goes back to journalism.
And that's fair enough. And there might be, like, you know, so I kind of understand what you mean, because I'm kind of equating it with when I was having miscarriages. I wasn't speaking about it in the time because I didn't have the fortitude to deal with the... Generally, I experience like a wave of support whenever I talk about anything. But sometimes, you know, the way like love, kindness can be like painful when you're sad. So I wasn't able to talk about it at the time. And so, I understand sometimes why privacy is important in that regard. But I just find, like, apart from my daughter, who I do have privacy for my kids online.
Yeah.
So I shared her until I felt like her face had settled into the face that she's going to have.
And then I know.
And
then
I'm like, okay, now someone recognized her one day with someone who wasn't me or Noel, and I was like, that's fucking... Sorry, excuse me. That's very weird. I'm a little bit terrified of that.
Yeah, because there are cases now. There are people suing. There are people, you know, children suing
their parents.
Suing their parents, yeah.
It's the last thing I need now is them to start suing me.
Don't want
if that catches on, we're all screwed. Stephanie, you have a question for Cathy about love.
Yeah, so in your books, you know, there's love in so many different types of facets. Looking back on your life, what surprised you most about the way love has changed or evolved for you? Like, what has love meant for you?
I think we're going to come back to children now on some level. But I mean, I went to a convent school, and you know, the sex. I know we're going to discuss briefly sex. I mean, we were given absolutely no.
We can discuss sex. Let's be very un-Irish and discuss love and sex together. I know they're two different things.
Let's wrap it up. Let's bring religion into it as well. It was a convent school, so there was no sex education. And in a way, there was no conversations about anything. I mean, I look at now, there are conversations about, we'll say, consent, which is amazing. But obviously, we need an awful lot more of that. But so you start off with this, I don't know, deeply idealized version of the planet. And I started off with this very idealized version of love and romance and how wonderful that would be, and that it does not equip you for the real world on any level. The biggest sort of shock to me was how much I loved my kids. And yes, that did not mean that there were times when I was like, I can't do this anymore, I need to get out of the house. But that was absolutely huge. And that growth period, I mean, the period from when, you know, I grew up with them and suddenly I became a grown up. And I don't know how much of a grown up I was before. I mean, I did a very good impersonation of it, but I wasn't. Mm-hmm. But suddenly I was like, OK, I'm a grown up. I'm stepping up to the plate. And that has changed so much. So where love is for me now, and I suppose if I look through my life and relationships, I'm in the sort of the third big relationship of my life. And it's a totally different place. It's a place of respect, understanding, huge love. And that has grown through me trying to model stuff for my kids and say, this is what love should look like, and seeing what they needed. And am I going off on some mental tangent?
No. Here? I suppose the one thing that people might be thinking is, okay, so what you mean is that when you get mature, it's not exciting anymore.
No, that's not what I'm saying in the slightest. Yeah. It can be absolutely spectacularly exciting. It is incredibly exciting. But it's just, you stop, you understand the things that are real. You understand that, you know, it is not about, you know, let's jet off somewhere exciting and let's talk about what gigs we want to go to, and let's, you know, it's not about surface things. It's about real stuff. And you can have conversations. That's the thing. You know, if everyone who was getting married or moving in with someone or setting out to go steady could sit down and have conversations about this real stuff, because people don't. Nobody talks about, you know, money. Will we argue over money? Childcare, you know, who's going to be, are we going to be doing this evenly, or is it going to be one of those, I'll take the kids out for you, which is a statement.
Yeah, but listen, you deal with all that as you go along. The bit of drama at the beginning is great stuff, like, isn't
drama
it?
Drama at the
like,
beginning is great stuff. Yeah. Drama at the end, less so.
Yes, okay.
But the drama at the beginning isn't meant to continue, is it?
No,
good, because like...
It's chemicals in the body, like, it's to get you to settle down, I think, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't like the feeling of excitement. Go on anyway.
Yeah. Oh, you don't like excitement, no. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes me kind of anxious.
You're at that stage as well, though, no, are you? Where it can be, Stephanie, easy to forget about the great love affair between you and your partner.
Oh, no, we're housemates who are also colleagues, and our job is to keep children alive. Like the other, last week, we have this thing, right, where the other way some people have phrases that they use all the time. Mm. Ivan Yates is, the point I'm making is this. My husband says initially a lot, right? And anytime he says initially, I say, why were you in Italy? And then yeah. we laugh about it. Now, he might be really serious, you know, but we haven't. The other day I did it. I didn't. So he said initially, and then he said, I mean, I don't even know why I was in Milan.
Oh, that's so wonderful.
And I laughed and I was like, oh my God, we're still here. Like yeah, somewhere.
Yeah.
We're going to get back
to this. You are still
this.
There. You are still there. Yeah. yeah.
But like, it was a joke about Italy and I haven't talked to him since. Like, since then, it's been like, we need bread. Can you go get milk? But does this person need a nappy change?
But that's survival. You're in the survival phase.
But so I'm autistic. And one of the things that I really struggle with is I find it hard to imagine abstract things in the future. So when I'm in something, I feel like how it's going to be forever. And that's a real autistic thing. So I keep saying to my husband, like, do you think we'll be married? Like, I see old people. I'm like, do you think we'll still be married when we're that age? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, I don't know if we will. Like, I can't see how we keep doing this until we're that age. And he keeps telling me, you don't have to do it like this until we're that age.
But you won't be doing it like that. I don't know. Sorry.
I'm just going to have to trust you.
Kathy, do you not think one of the most amazing things that is going to happen for Stephanie at some point here is that the two of them are going to go away without the kids, even for a night, and it'll feel like a 2-week holiday, and they'll remember who they are again, and it's just that first trip away with no babies.
I would go for 3 nights. For the first 2 nights that you actually sleep, and then 3 nights, and you'll start missing the children so hideously, and you will be delirious that you're with Noel, but you're going, oh my God, the children, I miss them. It's really hard.
But sure, we get into bed at night and we look at photos of them. Okay. Shut up, don't wake up, I'm looking at photos of you.
But you know, that is so beautiful. I was in advance of this, I was thinking of, you know, the things that go wrong in relationships, and the Gottman Institute, that amazing guy John Gottman and his wife, and they studied people's faces, and they managed to thin slice this study where they could get a couple in a room, and within about 30 seconds of leaving this couple in a room and getting them talking about something, they could work out if they were going to stay together, because it came down to certain expressions on their face, and the main one was contempt. If there's contempt, you're gone. If there is, what are the other ones? If there's defensiveness, if it's like, you know, one person says to the other, you know, you forgot to put the bins out, and it turns into a row, and it's like, well, it's not my job. This sort of refusing to take responsibility.
Jerry Seinfeld used to have a line that as you get on in a marriage, words don't mean what they really mean anymore. So that where's my toothbrush actually means I hate you.
Yes, but that's true. But these are the things. So it's like criticism. I mean, you know, most criticism is a negative. There's very few times when criticism is a positive, unless possibly it's your editor explaining your book to you.
Even then, it's negative.
You're going to go home and cry. But these are the things. So if you see those things, you see the defensiveness, the not being able to apologize, not being able to take responsibility, contempt, then forget it. You may as well retain the services of a lawyer at that point. But with you, the two of you, it's just so happy and wonderful. And you are just going to have this blissful time. But I don't know how you explain that, because when you're neurologically, I am neurologically, I don't know how to explain my personal neurological issues, but there's like this high level of anxiety that throbs like a lighthouse. So I need to stick things up in the mirror going, it'll be okay. It will be okay.
It will be okay.
But you believe it then?
You know, I do. And I can go, okay. And I sort of calm myself down. And I go, okay, so maybe you need to say, you know, in 6 months' time, me and Noel are going to go away for 3 nights.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah. If you have a throbbing lighthouse brain of anxiety, and maybe you don't want to talk about it, that's totally fine.
No, go for it.
But you, with the cancer diagnosis, like how
did that work out?
Like, how do you deal with cancer if you're an anxious person? Like, that must be the pinnacle of...
But you see, I am I mind people, and I sort of... You know, as a child, I was like the person who minded everyone. So
that's a trauma response, isn't it?
Yeah. Possibly.
Anyway, sorry, go on.
But when I got cancer, my big fear was telling the people I love, you know, telling my beautiful sons who were 20 that I had cancer. And I mean, I'm their primary person.
I love it. You made it about everybody else.
Totally. But a lot of people do. I was going to say women, but that's a very sexist thing to say.
But probably more so.
Possibly
more. Yeah.
And about, you know, PJ, and about my mom and my sister and my brother, telling the boys, like, you know, PJ is an absolute adult, and, you know, we were going to be there together. And he obviously he's incredibly upset. But, you know, telling two 20-year-olds who, and I am their mom and their everything on some levels.
Yeah,
Were the doctors able to tell you like
hang
that?
Hang on, Stephanie. Time is against us and there are a few more things I want to get in, if that's okay.
Yes,
Cathy, you have a question for Stephanie around body image.
But yes, this is it, because we were talking about this before, and so she's trying to find her bit of paper. I spent years tied to this sort of negative image of myself regarding, you know, body image. I mean, I sort of grew up with looking at the, you know, girls on 7-Up commercials going, they're fabulous. Why am I not exactly like them? I.e. Californian models, basically. So how have you managed to move on from that? Or have you moved on from that? Or
So body image is like such a toxic one, I think, for all women, but especially. So I have an eating disorder. I have been every weight. And I'm in a really good place at the moment, even though my body isn't where my brain wants it to be, if that makes any sense.
Totally. Like, so totally.
When I was at my thinnest, I was probably at my sickest. I hadn't had a period in 3 years. But everyone was telling me, you look amazing. I was on the cover of magazines. People wanted me for photo shoots. I was, you know, like, and I was saying, I was seeing an endocrinologist and she was saying, like, I can give you something to give you a period, but like, it's a fake period. Like, it's not like your body, your brain thinks that you are in starvation mode.
You're
and so it's
famine.
Shutting down all other unnecessary things. Like, you're going to have to gain weight to get your period back. And for 2 consecutive years, I saw her every 6 months and she would say, are you willing to gain weight to get your period back? And I said, no, like, I have this photo shoot next week. I'm not. And then the day my grandmother died, 11th of September, 2019, I had a pre-scheduled, you know, appointment with this endocrinologist. And she said to me, are you willing to gain weight to get your period back? And I said, OK, fine, I am. So eventually I was on a train to Athenry one day during a general election campaign and my period came back and I texted everyone I know just these emojis of blood spots. And people were like, what's happening? What is this? And I was like, my period is back.
Do you know what they call it in Australia? Shark Week. I just had to bring that in. I thought that was funny.
So my period came back. So then I was like at a healthy weight. And then I've been pregnant 6 times.
Oh, sweetie.
I have had IVF twice. I'm on medication for my mental health, which has made me gain weight. And I'm like, okay, I have gained weight, but like, my body has done the things my body needed to do, and I'm alive. And I know exactly, because when the thought comes to me, like, I need to go back to that person, I'm like, okay, I know exactly how to get back to that. I know exactly how to restrict. I know exactly how to do the bulimia thing. I can do it if I want to do it, but I have to give up so much for that. And so the body image thing is kind of like focusing on the function of my body. And seeing like, bodies are meant to do this thing. All of my body is doing all of the things it's meant to do. I can do everything I want to do. Therefore, my body is functioning, and be less focused on the image of things. But it has meant that I do less TV now. I'm less inclined to have my photo taken but that's because of public discourse around my body rather than my perception of my body.
Yeah, this is it. Anytime a woman gains weight, it's like, oh my God, would you look at the state of her? It's like the sort of the heat argument. It's either, oh my God, so-and-so is so thin, we're worried about her, to, you know, oh look, so-and-so has put on weight in the same issue. I'm just using heat as an example. The fascination for the body image. I mean, I used to get very thin and I'd feel amazing. And when I was doing the Dancing with the Stars thing, I was dancing 6 hours a day. That obviously has an effect. And I was like, this is great. It's fabulous. And I could eat like a horse. But, you know, when that went away, I felt this, oh my God, I'm losing this. You know, it's like, oh, it's going. And now with this, you know, sort of post-cancer body where I haven't sort of basically worked out for a year, and I've always worked out and I've always been fit and healthy, and I'm going, oh God, you're dreadful, you're getting old and you're getting fat and your skinny jeans don't fit you. And I mean, it's crazy. The plus is that I know that, yeah, I know exactly how to like work out like a maniac and not eat an awful lot. I know how to do that, but that's not healthy. This body has got through cancer, is still basically getting through cancer, and is going to for the rest of my life. My aim is to hopefully keep that cancer from coming back. So it's a different ball game now. And that's,
you have to really look after your body and nourish it.
Yeah, going to try and live.
And just from a millennial, so can I just say finally, skinny jeans are out.
Oh, I know,
so,
skinny jeans.
So it's okay that you don't fit into them because you can't wear them anymore.
I bought a pair of vintage 501s the other day in Tans. Cool, I'm good.
Thank you so much, both of you, for your honesty and that, I mean, look, if authenticity is what we're striving for here, to get moments of it, that was just terrific. Thank you both so much. And just the plugs, Cathy, your latest novel, your 23rd, is Sisterhood, published by HarperCollins, and you're writing a new novel as we speak. Yeah. And Stephanie, you're back podcasting with your Basically podcast.
Yeah. And so, the Sunday Independent, give them a shout out there.
Okay, and the Sunday Independent, Cathy Kelly and Stephanie Prisner. I'm going to spare you, Stephanie, all the mothering advice that's coming in on the text.
Oh no, okay? Give it to me, I'll print it out.
Yeah, okay, well, I'll give it to you later. But everybody knows what you should be doing. Cathy Kelly and Stephanie Prisner, honestly, thank you both so much. We'll take a break.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.